This is an Irreverent podcast. Check out irreverent.fm for shows from all our friends.
1 Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts, and if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.
You're listening to an Irreverent podcast. Check out irreverent.fm for more content from all our friends. Hello and welcome to Exvangelical. I'm your host, Boyd Chastain. My guests this week are Kevin Garcia and Reverend Sarah Heath, who you may know better as Your Favorite Aunts. Your Favorite Aunts is another member show of Irreverent Media Group, and I was on their most recent episode, which I'll link to in the show notes. This was a really fun conversation, and it was the closest experience I've had since before the pandemic began, of being at a party and peeling off from the main group and having a really meaningful side conversation. We talk about why they started their show, how the pandemic has affected their work and the work of caretakers of all kinds, including pastors, as well as how things like community and spiritual care will continue to change in light of the pandemic, which is raging once again. Everyone who's listening, if you're eligible to get vaccinated and haven't yet, please go get vaccinated. This episode has very sparse editing, and I hope you enjoy the flow of the conversation. Be sure to follow Kevin and Sarah online and check out Your Favorite Aunts wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to support my work, you can do so by purchasing a paid subscription to the Post-Evangelical Post newsletter at postevangelicalpost.com. That supports all of my work, from writing to this podcast to Powers and Principalities and future projects. I've been working on revamping the newsletter in the background for some time, and we'll have some news on that very soon. Free tiers are also available. You can also support the show by purchasing podcast merch over at exvangelical.threadless.com. There are t-shirts, stickers, journals, and more available there. You can also support the show by rating and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts or just letting someone else know about the show. You can follow me all over the internet at brchastain on Twitter, at brchastain _ on Instagram and TikTok, and you can follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at exvangelicalpod. All right, let's get into it. So it looked like it's recording for everybody, and then I'll do
yeah, dude. Actual
yeah, intro. Showing my voice. All right.
Coming back to the heart of worship.
I tried to use the... Let me see if this actually works. I don't know if it will. Oh, hey.
Look at <That's>, us.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Exvangelical. I have with me today on the show two fellow members from the Irreverent Media Group, Kevin Garcia and Reverend Sarah Heath, also known as Your Favorite Aunts. Welcome to the show.
Sump Beach.
It's so good to be here.
Oh, my God.
Well, thank you both for coming on the show. We just finished wrapping your show, Your Favorite Aunts, and I was on it.
Truly, I feel like I'm really I love a podcast. It's just a chat cast, and that's what we've achieved. It's just like we're just talking about important shit that we find interesting.
That's right.
And people weigh in, and then like the weirdest thing for me is when people comment to us like, that podcast has meant so much to me. I'm like, oh, awesome. That's like a benefit of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm always surprised.
If you truly love our podcast, share it on social media.
Please.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Really, it's still in the year of our Lord 2021, the best way to get the word out about a podcast.
Because podcasts are still the least sought out piece of media, you know?
It's like there's no algorithm that's really like driving engagement for podcasts. It's
my God, a podcast algorithm.
Like, could
it's
you imagine?
It's just math, not magic. Remember that, Blake.
It really
that's
is
right.
just...
It, But that, I mean, math is kind of magical too. But
to me, it is absolutely magical, and there are little gnomes who do it. But
I am really bad at math. So.
Gnomes? Wait, gnomes?
Yeah, because I can't figure it out. Math gnomes. You don't know about the gnomes.
I missed something in this exchange, but we're going to keep going.
I just went with it.
I wish anyone could see my face in that moment because I...
Everyone can hear your face, honey.
They can hear...
Often I hear your face. When wow. I am not even near you, I can hear your face.
And that's shade.
Yeah, I just meant like little people who figure out math because I'm terrible at it. That's all I meant. I was trying to be cute, and now you've like pointed it out. Anyway, why are you having us on the show, Blake? Because we're just going to fight. I'm just kidding. That's not true.
No, it's great. This is great. So, Kevin, you and I actually were on each other's shows back when we were both sort of starting out and figuring out what the hell we were doing with podcasting.
Yeah, I had interview with you like right after my big breakup, and I was staying at my friend Rachel's house.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, those were dark times.
Oh, darkness.
And I mean, I think it was like episode 12 of this show, and now it's in like episode 150 or something. Mm-hmm. So I actually met you, Sarah, through Kevin.
That's true.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, well, let's just start by how did the two of you meet? And then whichever one of you want to talk about why you decided to start recording your shows, your conversations rather, and making it a show.
Yeah.
So where did Kevin and Sarah, where does the story of Kevin and Sarah begin?
Where did we meet?
Tale as old as time.
Well, I was stuck in this castle. I had this really, really rare disease that was called greed and avarice. And it actually, well, it's not so
I
much
had
a disease.
Basket
it was,
full of books.
Yeah. And I was cursed by this witch because I was an asshole to her. Really weird thing. Long story short, once we escaped France.
You had this furry phase for a little bit.
And yeah. We separated. I died and then was reincarnated into what you now see as this form.
Now they are here.
And then
we met at Wild Goose. And I love when you tell the story because you tell it so well. But
I went to your tent by accident. Not by accident, but just like technically I was going to go see Brandon Robertson talk about something, but his plane didn't arrive on time. And so I was just like, well, I'll keep going, see who this is. And that person looks interesting. I'll go to her talk. Filled up to the brim. There was no seat except for a seat on the front fucking row, which being a show off, like, you know, whatever.
First of all, I didn't know anybody, but keep going.
Yeah. And so I went and I sat down and I thought she gave a really good talk. And then I said, I'd like to be your friend. And then we went to the beer tent and that was that.
Seriously, that was literally it. It was one of the first times. It was the weirdest thing where someone walked up and said, I want to be your friend. And I was like, yeah. And I still have like the card you gave me because I was like so fascinated by what you were doing.
Oh,
and
my God, I did. I had business cards. Mm-hmm. What a fucking.
It said hot mess on it. Yeah. It says hot mess on it. I kept it.
Oh, yes. The original yellow ones.
Yeah, they were cute.
Stop. Sorry,
I remember
keep going.
It's not me that he's yelling at. It's his dog. This bitch. I think one of the coolest thing was you were sharing what you were doing. And I actually said to you, it sounds like you're starting a tiny revolution.
And that's worth the podcast, A Tiny Revolution with Kevin Garcia.
Ta-da.
So it's been so fun. Our friendship has grown. I think we've always been close, but I think for us in the time of COVID, I went through a breakup right before COVID. So having a friend that is like a soulmate in so many ways and someone who I begin and end most of my days with has been really, I would say, one of the most profound parts for me of COVID isolation and having just, and as I transitioned out of being a local pastor, there was just this person. And so that's how we started. And we have just been like, Kevin just is part of my life and just is part of me. I often feel like once people meet Kevin, they go, oh, like they get more of me in a weird way. So
that's because I give you enough of my annoying, like, ow, stop, dog. I love you so much. She bites so hard sometimes.
Not me again. No. The dog.
Not me biting my friend's fingers again.
I'm into it. What? Just kidding. Sometimes I weird myself out. Like I try to play in the game and then I weird myself out. Sorry.
Yeah. Jeremiah, good Judy's.
Good Judy's, the bestest of Judy's. And yeah. I was so like, when you first, so Blake, like when Kevin was like, we should talk to this person and maybe we'll do this thing together. It's the, do you have friends in your life where if they say you should know this person, it has always been an incredibly enriching experience. And that's how you know that that other person knows you super well and knows like your passions and that sort of thing. Like if Kevin says you will like this person, it has 100% always been true.
Oh. That's because I, I'm a very good judge of character. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. And I think you surround yourself with people that help elevate who you are instead of just, and I think it's a rarity where.
And it has to be mutually beneficial. Like I don't want a relationship to be, it could, because like, if you're paying me, that's a client, you know, client coach relationship. Like, that is a one-way relationship in some ways, like, you know, or it's like an the energy exchange is different. Like, you know, I'm pouring out energy. You are helping me pay my bills. It's different. Right. But then like in all of my other relationships, I look for things that are mutually beneficial. And I also look for, am I having fun?
Yeah. And, yeah. There's that reciprocity that you need to have.
And if I'm not having fun and if this is annoying and if we're not good for each other, then why are we doing it? Mm-hmm. And so, that's always my thing with all of my friends. Just like, I will do this as long as it is fun. And,
so that's why I just have to maintain fun all the time. I'm just kidding.
No, that's why you need to maintain being your own damn self. Yeah. And that's because that to me is
fun.
Yeah. Like, cause that's the heart of it all. Mm-hmm. I think I've gone from like silly drunk to very semi-serious drunk now.
Oh, you know, made the transition.
That's the, I we've love
made,
that into, corner.
We've made the turn into philosopher. Philosopher.
I love
drunk.
That corner.
Just imagine that this is the period of the party with Kevin where you're talking with them, you know, hour probably two. Wherever the drinks were being served, and then you found a quiet corner.
Yes.
I'm by the food table.
Right. Yeah. I'm holding on to my vape and just like looking at you intently and moving, and like the camera's going out of focus.
The camera knows. It's so funny because these are often the moments where Kevin won't put up with any of the lies I tell myself. So I'll be like,
oh, I can never ever put up. Like, it's so interesting to me. Like, you know, it's like, lie to God, don't lie to yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I'll be like, I think this is how I'm always going to be. And Kevin, during these moments, will say, no. Why would you even say that?
It's just like, that's the thing. It's just like, I see in you, like, there's like limitless potential. I'm just like, you're not an idiot. Stop acting like it. You know, you know, this shit.
Everyone needs this friend at a party.
I know. Everyone. Like, that's the thing. It's just like, that's why I'm a coach and not a therapist, because I can say things like, stop acting like an idiot.
You're being a dick. Quit.
All right.
Yeah.
Kevin, that's a really good point. I'm really curious about that. What is the distinction between a coach relationship and a therapist? I'm sure that in addition to different things relative to credentials that you might need for either or, but what's the difference in the relationship?
The difference in relationship is obviously different kinds of credentials. And also the goals are different. In a typical psychotherapy relate, like therapist client relationship with a trained psychotherapist, your whole goal is I'm trying to work on myself to feel better, to understand my emotions a lot better, and to be able to love and accept those parts of me. And then also to like work through big things like trauma. And you know, you are so special to be. Now of all times, you're choosing to make all the noise. A therapist, I will say, like, they're trying to lead you back to yourself in some ways. And like, but it's like, it feels like, for me, it's to do the deep, I don't know. It's more like they're the ones who are holding the larger emotional space for the things mm-hmm. that need space. Like grief mm-hmm. needs mm-hmm. a lot of space. Life yeah. transition needs a lot of space. Sadness needs a lot of space. My role as a coach and what I do specifically is I work with people to teach them specific spiritual practices to help take all the shit you're learning in therapy, all the yes. emotional yes. stuff, and put it into practice. And we take all of the thing, like, you know, like all the emotional intelligences that you know cognitively, and we put them into an embodied practice so that you can start feeling better. Mm-hmm. And I specifically work with a particular curriculum. And so when people are working with me, we have a specific goal in mind.
Right.
And typically, I think in therapy, it's a little bit more open-ended. And for me, I'm just like, by the end of this 12 weeks, I'm going to teach you how to have a spiritual practice. And if you take me up seriously, your spiritual practice will change your entire life. Hmm. And so that's my work, as I kind of like, especially I work with like ex-Christians or former Christians or post-Christians or anybody like within the Christian periphery who is trying to figure out how to do spirituality outside of strict Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm also currently applying to be certified as a sex educator.
Oh.
Is that like the thing that is so incredible to me is that the way that people are able to find that they don't need just a therapist. Therapists are great, wonderful, but there really is sort of this structure thing around it. And they also don't just need a coach. I think these mm-hmm. two things go really well together. And I think understanding the difference in goal is super important. I know that our dear friend Matthias and I, one time we're talking about this idea of coaching, and we were talking about how, you know, it's really beautiful to see people doing it in a way that highlights the need for therapy. So many of our friends, when they're mm-hmm. being really responsible within coaching, will say, and have you talked to your therapist about that? Because I am not a therapist. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't actually work with anybody who has not actually gone to therapy.
Yes. Or is like, in. Like, I love that about you.
Yeah, it's like if you're in therapy, that's good. I want to know how long you've been in. How's your relationship? What are you working on?
As a pastor, I wish that could have been a rule when I was a pastor. Like, you, we cannot be in community unless you are in therapy.
No, but
it seems like it'd be a good rule.
I mean, like, I think that anybody who is responsible enough, like, you just recognize. I mean, the thing I think that's been so wonderful is that, like, the work I do is a lot of, like, I feel like we're learning how to destigmatize that, like the need for help.
Right.
Mm. And like understanding that like we're so ashamed because like we've been taught that it's our fault and it's not. Most right. of the things that like mm-hmm. happened to us, especially those of us who left evangelicalism, who grew up in any sort of sexism, patriarchal, heterosexist culture, I don't know, like America.
All of
heard
us.
Of it? All of us, yes. We're all carrying around this like, thing of you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. Even if you didn't explicitly learn that, you learned right. you were not enough because capitalism taught us that you're only worth a labor which other people deem as valuable. And if they don't deem it as valuable, then you're not valuable. Mm-hmm. And then you can see how easily that translates into what the church learned and operated.
Yeah.
And throw those headphones.
I did just throw my headphones because I just got really excited, guys.
But yeah, I think for me, like that was like a really big game changer was like recognizing how much capitalism and white supremacy really stole from like a really rich faith and a really rich tradition.
I don't know if you know much about that as someone who has a podcast all about just
powers and principalities. You haven't heard of it? Listen, he can promote his shit on his own time.
That's right.
Absolutely. You are such a trash human.
I'm not the worst. I'm not the worst, but I'm certainly not great either.
Which is our motto.
All right, let's.
Your favorite aunt.
not the worst.
We're not the worst, but we're certainly not the best.
We're not the worst, but we're certainly not good.
And we need to destigmatize not being the worst, but also.
Yeah, you, Mary Oliver, you don't have to be good.
And we aren't. We didn't try to say.
I don't even try. Not even a little bit. And that's the part slippery slope conversation where they say, look, right there, like, look at this heathen. Beer in one hand, weed vape in the other. Just.
That's you, baby.
I actually want to, Sarah, I want to ask you a little bit. Just sort of, we had talked a bit about how there's this distinction between the practical work that Kevin does as a coach and other people that are in that sort of space and offer those types of services. And then there's therapists on who provide a different type of service. But then I think about the type of work that you just left as a pastor. And the modern pastor, like the sort of model of a pastor that we've had for a long time, has been this like person that does it all, right? Like
you
may be called upon to do individual counseling and run like some sort of committee meetings and also deal with the maintenance of a building and do premarital counseling and keep all the secrets and keep and
I have so many
listen
secrets.
To all these things.
Yeah.
Like in light of your experience as being a pastor, like how do you sort of relate to and what do you think about especially in the sort of environment that we're in, like post-COVID, where everybody, like an entire society, an entire global society has gone through this thing, like even at a base level. And then everybody else has additional traumas based on their place in society.
Right.
Like what do you make of that from your experience of having to wear so many hats and address so many needs?
You know, it's fascinating. I'm so interested to see what's going to happen with mainline and also evangelical churches within America after, you know, as things kind of shake out and they're starting to shake out. We're seeing numbers of clergy leaving more than we've ever seen because everybody has told clergy they have to be everything and it's impossible. And I think more and more we're realizing like clergy really should play this role in helping people honestly with spiritual practices and not be your counselor. And not be your program director and not be.
And maybe not even be the teacher at the front of the, on the pulpit.
I think there is this, I've been doing this work around making spaces and thinking through like even consulting pastors and all these sort of, not just like the physical space, but also for people to think through what does it look like to create space, realizing that there's this thing that happened and, someone named it the death of the expert. So when we moved into sort of this digital age that we're all in, there is no longer like that. Think about a church from back in the day. Everyone is, and now most churches, everyone's facing forward, looking at one person. That one person is the keeper of the knowledge. Then they tell everyone how you should live your life, guys, how you should live your life. And I just listened to a Jerry Falwell Jr. podcast and about sort of the destruction of this person who is trying so hard to, I'm supposed to be the keeper of the knowledge, right? And so everyone's listening. What is the keeper of the knowledge going to say? So that made sense back when maybe your pastor was the only one who could read the scripture. It doesn't make sense in a culture and community when people trust their phones. They can look things up. They can Google. They can do all these things quicker. They can do the things that they so often look to a pastor to do. So there is no longer an expert. We've had a death of an expert. So when we talk about that, clergy who have been told you're supposed to be the expert, there is this sense of, I can't be all things to all people. I'm not Paul. Never wanted to be. And I think there is this, and it's a false narrative, right? We make people out to be superheroes, and then they do really shitty things. Because
we make people into God, and then we're surprised that they're not.
And that they're terrible. And they're not terrible. They're just human. And I think one of the things I would love to do is help people figure out how for us to make space for each other, including the clergy in our midst, for them to be the person who has, yes, had this amazing opportunity to be set aside to work on spiritual practices with people, to create space for people to do that. And we are not expecting them to be all things. So when I met with couples, and when I still meet with couples, because I still do weddings all the time because they're one of my favorite things to do. Weirdly, weddings and funerals, guys, I love them. I love to meet with them and I say, look, I'm going to do this premarital thing with you where all you're going to do is fill out this survey for me. And all it's going to do is help highlight the spaces that you can start in therapy with. I will not marry you if things are highlighted that you're not actively in therapy about. If things aren't highlighted, fine, great. But as a couple, if I see these things, and that's all I do, and I say, I am not, even though I have a degree in psychology, I have studied countless hours of pastoral counseling, I'm not a therapist. And you guys need a therapist. We all mm-hmm. need to understand that we have community for a reason to help, you know, bolster everyone. And we got to stop looking to one expert to be the thing and be all the things. And we don't have the systems. I think, Blake, what you're talking about is that the fact that the systems haven't changed. It made mm-hmm. sense when you lived in a tiny community. Yeah. So they were maybe at a maximum dealing with 50 people's stories, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they also knew your spouse. They knew every person in your, and so the work they were doing, you know, I watch all these British TV shows where they're the vicar is in the town and like but they, you know, they have all the resources because it was, again, it wasn't they were the expert. They just were in touch with the people right. around. And so I think as I watch,
and the church was loaded too. Like the church was yeah. loaded and they could essentially tax people.
Or and there like was so the, much the money. Throne. And now pastors are also asked to be fundraisers. So imagine when you're trying to talk truth to power, but you're worried that if you speak truth to power, the people that hold the purse strings that are sitting with you, if they don't like your message, they pull their money out. And now you've got that as well as something sitting on top of you. And you're looking as you're speaking at the three people that you know are in major trauma and you're not allowed to talk about it with anyone. I think there yeah. is this huge conversation to be had about actual pastors. And I'm talking, there's a difference between a speaker who just goes up there, doesn't know the people, is not invested in their lives.
Hello, come on.
And the people who are pastoring people, because it is yes. very different. And we talk about very. It like it's the same.
It is, I mean, a huge fucking difference, because the problem is like what we see. People hear pastor, they think Hillsong, they think Bethel, mm-hmm. they think white,
who affluent, literally male. Have doors in and out so they don't have to address or be near the people.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. And
that's
again,
not a pastor. That is a teacher. That is a motivational yeah, speaker.
The teaching pastor. You know, that's the
yeah.
The
and that's fine that's if you want if you want to call
sure,
it that,
if you
but just
give
like
them that title.
But at the end of the day, I'm just like, I don't think you should even call that a pastor, you know?
It's a very weird thing that has happened. And I think, I mean, your work, so much of your work, Blake, I am so grateful for, because it helps people kind of get
into contextualize it all.
Yes. And they start to go, oh, that leads to this, which leads to this. And this is how we got here.
It's all but connected. Think, it all makes sense.
But I think we're
yeah,
here.
I mean, that's how I see my role is like,
right.
Is giving people context for their experience in this place as they move to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that like early stage. And then maybe Kevin is like, after someone's made sense of what that means for them, then Kevin can come in and give them practices. Mm-hmm.
And anyways, I'm sorry. You know, no, I was just thinking through, like, as I've been working through my own time since leaving my position, which, by the way, my church was great. It wasn't a difficult breakup. It wasn't, you know, Kevin actually was at my last service.
It wasn't a breakup. It wasn't a breakup. It was you stepped down.
Right. Yeah, retired is our joke. but part of it is that.
Call AARP.
That's right. Part of it is, I think, as we talk about these deconstruction spaces, as we talk about these ex-evangelical spaces, there is so much goodness of people connecting and creating community, but there are so many clergy who are left as bodies in the wake that mm-hmm. Not only were they spoon-fed the same stuff, but then they realized they were the ones spitting it out. And they are... you know, so often I see all these memes and stuff, and there's, and I want to say there are people behind that joke that you're making. There are people behind that experience, and they got here in the same damn boat as you did, and they were sold the same damn thing. And like, look, I get it. The number of times I've had to go to a conference and hear some guy talk about a super hot wife, like I get, but we're all swimming in the same soup, friends. And until we recognize that it is just as damaging for the person who's sitting in the front as it is for the person sitting in the back, I think we dehumanize and we continue to do it. And so I think it's, as I sit now as more of an observer, it's interesting to me how my brain is starting to go, oh, we need, you know, I joke around with Justin, who used to be a pastor as well, that from Go Home Bible, You're Drunk, that, you know, we really need like, people need to be in recovery, like people who are pastors, because it's almost like this experience of like, I believed it so much that I started to sell it. And now I can't even go into the places and spaces where other people are healing because I am seen as the extreme other, you know, I am seen as the thing they're poking at. I gave my whole life to this thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because your trauma, your trauma and their trauma are like butting heads.
Right.
And
like, right.
And like, so, and even though there's
and
like,
neither are wrong.
And there's, and even though there's like a power dynamic that needs to be analyzed from each person, each person's perspective, it's still a human that exercises that power.
Yeah.
Like, it's really complicated.
Super. And also, it's not complicated because, if I may, I would like to posit the idea that if we actually point out, like, it's not to jump back to our last conversation, but it kind of comes down to a
but
little bit of
But also check it
like,
out.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to your favorite ants.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it now. Wait, just finish this conversation and go.
And then do it.
Yeah. But the scarcity mindset of just like, I know there's like this weird, like, you know, my trauma is more important than everybody else's trauma. And also if I'm not being centered, I'm not being heard. And if I'm not being heard, then and it's like, slow your roll a little bit. It's not that no one's not hearing you. It's that there's just a lot going on right now. And so one, it's like, I think too, I think that's the one thing. It's just like, take a deep breath. Okay. Chill out if you can. I know that doesn't help to say that to anybody, but just, Jesus Christ, calm down. And two, and that's also why you need to practice. You need to practice taking a breath. That's what you need. Yeah. And the second thing is, if we can recognize the source of this problem, the source of the trauma, it's not each other. Because, like, that's the thing is, like, we're projecting onto each other all of our hurts and pains and feelings. It's, like, the pain that that pastor or a former pastor is feeling when he, like, you know, feels like they're getting poked fun at. Like, it's one of those things where, like, the reason I don't feel bad about any of those memes or any sort of, like, former Christian memes ever is because just, like, is it a lie?
No, and I think that's that's the moment is to help people get to the point where they can laugh at it.
Because that's the thing, like, you got to realize you were lied to. And if you can realize that's not your fault.
Don't double down. I think there's this huge opportunity to figure out a way.
Wait, don't double down? What do you mean by that?
Some people look at those and they double down on who they used to be, or like,
they double down on their own fundamentalism.
Yeah, they get really grounded in it. Like, look at this, guys. This is the slippery slope we were all talking about. You know, like, look at these guys thinking they're so great and funny, right? I think the other thing that I love so much, I was actually talking to the guys from Dirty Rotten Church Kids about this. I think we have to laugh before sometimes we can deal with our pain. Maybe that's a Canadian thing, but we always like poke fun at the most because it gives us distance from it. It gives us an opportunity to go, you have no power over me because I can laugh at it. So I think it's important that we laugh.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, that runs deep, right? It gives you distance. It like puts things in perspective. There's that old trope of the jester is the only one that can tell the truth to the king.
Right.
You know, there's like you can, the truth in jest, like all of those types of archetypes or sayings, like it speaks to a real experience, like That's why comedy is so important to some people, because a lot of times, yeah, there's bro-y comics and stuff that want to be shock jocks with a mic, but there are also people that are saying really insightful things and they're using comedy to do it. Like, yeah. I mean, they sort of, even just thinking of like the catharsis that some people felt from watching like the Bo Burnham special that is on
Netflix. I need to watch that. I have had so many people mention that to me. I was even thinking about like Ted Lasso, which is like somewhat comedic, but it is so, if you look at, I mean, that is a profound conversation about what does it mean to be friends? What does it mean to be part of a system? What does it mean to, I mean, the boss being mean because they have to have, they have all these things on them and they have a past and they have a story. And I think that's the part that I wonder with, and I feel this like almost invitation in my next bit of work. You know, people ask like, are you going to take Rev in front of your name off? And the truth is like, no. For right now, what I can say is that like my denomination continues to just support my work as work outside of the church, and to see all of it as integrated and to see all of it as a part of it. And so I'm still a Rev. And what I hope is that your experience of me is going to change your understanding of what a pastor is and can be. And we're doing it together because your experience and how I'm experiencing you is helping heal my wounds where I thought I had to be everything to all people. I mean, guys, I have horror stories of having surgery and having people text me because there is an infighting happening in the church. And my God, I couldn't be a human that was having issues with my, like, it was just the worst experience where I dehumanized myself and you were dehumanizing me. And so how each experience we have with people is a healing, is a healing experience, is a moment or a chance for healing, right? And so I just think that there's so much that we have an opportunity to do and we have to laugh to get there sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kevin, you look like you had a comment. No? All right. I've got it. I've got
it. That is a thinking Kevin look, though. So you got it. You nailed it.
Okay. I've got a question. I've got a question for you, Kevin.
Question? Tell me what you're thinking about me.
So you're actually, when I think about your work, like you are sort of, your work is, I'm trying to, what's that really corny sort of marketing speak of like digital native, you know, like a lot of your work, has like, has been built on the sort of platforms, that people, the only sort of platforms that people have had over the last year when we've all been year and a half, aside from your amazing like tour that you did across the country recently, after, you know, for that window when it felt like it was okay to be back outside again.
Yeah. And then we said, let's stop. Let's not do it anymore.
Oh, right. There's all those people that still haven't gotten vaccinated for some goddamn reason.
Yeah. I will say the thing is that anybody who comes to my events, all of them are typically vaccinated. And so even like at this past event, in Minneapolis, I asked people to wear masks just to, like, you know, comply with CDC recommendations right now. But, like, everybody's vaxxed. So, like, anyways.
Yeah.
I'm not going to complain about that right now.
No. No, that was my brief little tangent of airing of grievances. Anyways, my overall question is just, like, you've found a way to establish a living, providing these services. And a lot of it, you use the term digital pastor. And like you mentioned in the other show that that's sort of
digital,
the way to build your cult. But those platforms are integral to your work too. Right. So like, how do you see that continuing to evolve and because I just feel like amongst all the things we're talking about, like the single job of a pastor being way too many hats for one person, coach and therapist doing two distinct things, it seems like the sort of opportunity where, well, there's all these digital tools where people can make their stuff available. It seems like that could accelerate those types of changes, right? So where do you see things going?
Right now, I see myself continuing to work. Like, I love working one-to-one and working in small groups with people because I find it to be... I love seeing people transform. I love seeing the light bulb moments where people are just... They're just completely in love with... You know, they're finally learning to... Okay, Tip, I'm going to go put her outside real quick. I swear. Go outside because you're driving me fucking nuts right now. Go.
Again,
trying
not
to ask Kevin a deep question.
1 Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts, and if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.
How do I see this shit evolving?
Yeah.
Well, I love working one-to-one with people. I love working in groups. And it's one of those things where I want to try and get the ideas and practices that I have into the hands of as many people as possible in as short amount of time as possible because they work. And I don't mean to sound cocky, but like the amount of people I've been able to work with in the past 2 years, like... Yeah, I mean, I've only been coaching really for like 2 years now, and I've already worked with close to like 90 clients. And that's phenomenal, like, to me. Like, but what I see it involving, I think, is like really like I really am interested in like what would it be like to start creating spiritual communities based around practice and teaching people how to do this. And also creating like new kinds of like spiritual gatherings. So just like, yeah, we'll get together on a Saturday instead of a Sunday, or we'll get together on the full moon and on the new moon, because that just feels nice and, you know, in line with the seasons. Or maybe we'll do like the new, like, you know, we'll do once a month in High Holy Days.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I feel like there's so many opportunities for like figuring out like, what do people actually want and need? Because, like, if anything, the COVID showed me, it showed me the Sunday morning service is non-essential. It's a non-essential service, you know? And so, my question is, like, what is essential?
You think a Sunday service is a non-essential service?
Yes.
Just for itself?
Yeah. I would say that, by and large, the Sunday morning service... does not do what it claims to do. Or because, like, and again, there's exceptions to every rule.
100%.
Yeah. And I would say my church is an exception to that rule. Like, I will flat out say that, like, I live in the contradiction of my statement. By and large, like, what we do on my church is essential, because you know why? Like, it's for some people, you know, it's the only place where they're going to get a meal that week.
Right.
You know, for some other people, it is like the only place where they felt a spiritual home. But for all these other evangelical megachurches out here, their lives were largely unaffected. You know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
They just had those ties on autograph or whatever, and they were fine.
Yeah. And so it's...
There's something to be said about having... one of the reasons I value Sunday gathering, or any gathering, or the gathering that, like, Kevin's talking about, is that it's not always self-selecting. So we get an opportunity to be around people that we didn't choose to be around. And in this world, that's been really rare. And I know there's like problematic things about that, but I think about like Twitter algorithms or Instagram algorithms, or even like the news that we get. Everything seems to be algorithm-based, where I get to decide that I'm only going to be around people who think and feel and are the same age, thought process as me, political party, whatever it might be. And when you talk about that Sunday service, when you say that, to me, the Sunday service that you're describing is the one that I've sat through, I've gone to, where everyone in the room is the same. And you're right. It's not essential. It doesn't move you. It doesn't, so, form you.
Yeah.
Because my theory is, and I hope that like what I'm interested in finding is just like, can we create alternative spiritual communities that are outside of this system?
Yeah. Like, so how do you, so I think, you know, there have been, it feels like there have been historical attempts at that, right? Like the Unitarian Church to me sort of seems like I've been to one or two services and it tries to like hold space for lots of different beliefs. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious like how, you know, all of us in this conversation have whatever degree of experience within things like the white American church or the white evangelical church, what that looks like for a sort of diverse group, even the people that like are post-Christian, ex-Christian, former Christian, ex-evangelical, deconstructed, you know, however they identify themselves, they have a wide array of spiritual beliefs. They might be done with that. Like I have friends that are like, I have no need or desire or pull towards spirituality. Like if it's practices like, or services, like, I am curious how both of you sort of, imagine those communities that hold all that space, because we came from a place that demanded that like unified belief stuff.
Yeah. And that's why I think that belief is not an important question. And so I like the, and like, if we put that up front, it does not matter what you believe. It matters how you feel. And I want you to feel good in this space. And if you don't feel good in this space, ask yourself why. Is it something that we're doing and can we rectify it? Or are you experiencing a trigger? Are you experiencing something from your past right now? And if it's coming up, would you like to heal it? And that's what that's my thing is like, I am very interested in getting like, and the thing is just like gathering in spiritual community specifically to do things like meditation. Like, and this is how I'll just say, answer the question. In my ideal spiritual community, there's an interesting music that's not congregational, but you just experience it. There is meditation, there is talking to one another, and there's a sharing of a meal. That to me is good spiritual practice. Then also figuring out what people need and then getting those needs met. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I mean, I would say that for me, I think I really value congregational practices together. When we talk about like a liturgy or the work of the people, like singing together is formational for me. I think about even as I'm going through tough times now, there are songs that pop in my head that are really important to me. And I want to continue sharing those or feeling, you know, or offering those to people. So there's that. I also think, and I want, one of the things I've had a really tough time with, and I've been spending some time just in my own head and heart thinking through, is like, I wonder when we self-select communities so much, are there spaces and places where you are gathering with people who do make you uncomfortable? Because one of the things I think was really important was you ask people to consider why they're uncomfortable instead of just are you uncomfortable, leave, you're safe to leave. It's if we can get to that heart of why that person is making me uncomfortable, I think there's a real potential for change, if change needs to happen, or just even some healing, right? Like if I'm around a thing that, if I'm willing to ask the questions, and I think one of the things that is really valuable in these sort of spaces is learning to ask, not just like ask ourselves questions and then trust our answers that come up within us to, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, Kevin.
Kevin, I know you have something to say, and then I'd like what you said too. I'll mention something after you're done, Kevin.
I'm wondering like there's an assumption that, well, it's like, I don't want to be in a space where just like, it's like, fully self-selected. And I'm wondering, like, because I've been in spaces that are primarily queer spaces that are focused on community care, that are focused on diversity, that are focused on making sure everybody is. And like, while they're queer, like, the, you know, but when I think of like that space, like, you know, a queer space in and of itself is unable to be exclusive. It's unable to keep people out. And so when I'm thinking about these spaces and saying like, I want to do things differently, it's not because I'm trying to exclude people. It's because that there is the spaces for those people already exist. And I'm not interested in those, that which already exists. Mm-hmm. I'm interested because like for you being able to walk into those, to, into a church and to connect with that music is brilliant, beautiful, wonderful. And I'm never going to jive that way ever again, probably. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that, I don't know.
It's a both. I feel like that's like a really important thing. It's like, it's a both end. And by self-selecting, I don't mean.
Yeah.
Like,
I think I know what you mean. So, Sarah, on that note, I'm reading this like philosophy book that's called Technology and the Virtues. And the philosopher Shannon Valor is her name, is writing this book, and the driving premise of the book is that technology is accelerating the change in our society at such a rate that we need to adapt. Her thesis is we have to take what we can from existing virtue ethics and apply it to what she calls it, like techno-moral virtue. And one of the examples she gives throughout one of her books, throughout the book, is this example from a Facebook ad from like the early 2010s, where this teenager is at a dinner, and instead of engaging with people and learning how to deal with friction, she just sits on her phone and texts to people that she agrees with. So I think I understand what you mean, like as far as, you know, self-selecting community and things like that. And part of my healing and sort of our family's healing from like leaving our last evangelical church, was attending an Episcopal church, and, the pastor there, like it was a combination of things. Like it was the pastor there, Pastor Deborah, was an amazing leader and amazing person, and like the best like pastor I'd ever had the privilege of having, and also like the Episcopal church being sort of built around ritual and like going back to practice, like practice, and a lot of times is, even if your beliefs change, Thich Nhat Hanh has this saying that like your beliefs will change, and they're supposed to.
They you should question it when it doesn't.
Your practices are what form you, though. So the things you continue to do, it's not magic, it's math. It's just, you know.
That's it. It's literally, I tell this, my favorite thing to say all the time is 5 minutes a day can change your fucking life. If you just spend 5 minutes a day giving yourself to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, if you spend 5 minutes a day just breathing.
So, like
and
I just wonder if part of the change that we're seeing is like an acknowledgement that even spiritual community can have a like a transience to it, and that in and of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing, but sometimes you just grow in a different
graduate. Like, I think about it this way. Some people are just like, I'm just like, you met Jesus and then you got what you needed, and now you're on to your next teacher. Like, for me, I haven't learned all I need. So but also just like, I've got multiple teachers though. Like, that's the assumption, is that like, you don't have to stick with one guru, you know?
I also think it's really important too, as we talk about people's trauma being activated in community. You know, when I said you should be in a community you didn't self-select, I think there is a season where you absolutely need to be in a community where you've self-selected, because you are not going to be able to be cared for in the way that you need to be cared for. So I just want to be really honest and clear about that. And I think in some ways, like, actually had a great conversation the other day with Brad about like this idea of like we've taught that love means forever and it is going to look a certain way and this is what it is. And then we beat ourselves to fitting into that. Church community, once you belong to a church, you're learning how to belong, you stick in that church. Well, most of us move so much, just even like states or whatever. I mean, I live in Oregon right now for like whatever reason, my Airstream. But I think there's, what if we could, and I know this word gets used a lot, like normalize this was a season.
Love so, without ownership.
Right. And that can be related to a community. And it, I, and a lot of Richard Rohr stuff of like thinking, like transcending and including, like, thank you for what you gave me. And I, you know, Kevin, even when we talked earlier about the movie, this idea, which was Pray Away, this idea that you are now at a place where you can say that was terrible, but I'm in a place that's healthy enough that I can even view this and like re-engage this stuff. I think it's kind of knowing ourselves well enough to know whether or not being in a space is helpful to us and that it pushes us.
Yeah.
And that's a deep knowing, right? It's a deep knowing of exactly what you're talking about of that question.
I would even say it's not even a deep knowing. It's actually quite a surface level knowing because if you can, if on the surface,
we've been just taught not to even acknowledge that the surface exists.
Right. Right.
Even the surface.
Very good. Very good.
Right.
Because my surface level reaction tells me everything that I need to know about how I can interact with something. Right. Because so if, for example, if I see one of my old pastors in public and I'm instantly filled with anger and I have to run away from that person, that shows me I'm not ready to engage. But then like, you know,
what
fast
do you always
forward,
say? I love it. It's data. Just
it's data to respond to. Everything is just data. It doesn't mean that I'm a bad person. It doesn't mean that I'm weak. It means that I've got trauma.
And everybody's got it. And you, and
and then fast forward 3 years, you run into that same pastor in the Publix parking lot. You look at him and you say, I haven't fucking thought about you in years.
And there, let me tell you guys.
And that surface level response tells you everything you need to know. That means, and you know, it's not magic. It's math. That's my new thing. Ooh, I'm gonna steal that. I'm gonna give that to a lot of people. You've been trying to show us a picture for like 5 seconds.
No. So, anyways, I've been thinking. So, I think about this. So, I love this guy. He's a media. He's like invented the field of media studies, Marshall McLuhan. He has this really inventive book. But there's this particular image of looking in the rearview mirror and seeing like a horse and buggy. And the text that goes with it says, the past went that away. When faced with a totally new situation, we tend to always attach ourselves to the objects, to the flavor of the most recent past. We look at the past through a rearview mirror. We march backwards into the future. And I think about that sometimes when
backwards into the future. Don't just let that can.
And so to me, like to me, that's like that's the sort of thinking that that folks like the two of you are challenging, you know, and the sorts of institutions that have held power in this country for a long time and are desperately clinging to it, even though they're not executing their power wisely. They're not helping their people that they should be serving. All of those things. It's because that's why there are these people clamoring online and like in the pews and in the streets and everywhere else is because we can all see it, you know, and we're trying to affect change. So,
and it's so loud. I mean, we talk about the like reaction people have. My mom taught me, and I think it's from Shakespeare, "Methinks thou dost protest too much." She used to say it to us when we would like say that we didn't like, when I would be like, I don't like that boy. And she'd be like, really? Cause you haven't stopped talking about him for the last, he's the worst. And she'd be like, interesting, you know, but I think the people who are loudest and having the toughest time with this transition, you know, like the pastors who have to like have a sermon on deconstructionism and they're like, oh, this is why it's bad. Those are the people.
And even make it an ism to me. That's just like,
Okay. Are we in, we're in ism? Wait, we have an ism now?
I've seen ex-evangelicalism, and I'm like, who said that? Who put the ism afterward?
First of all, I have always known that some sort of disorder would have my name, so it feels right. But I think there's this like sense that you're, they're so, what the thing I want to say to people is when they are yelling so loud or they're so afraid of loss. They're so afraid that they have put all of their everything, their student loans, everything you could imagine. They have moved their family across the country. They have come to the promised land. They have done all of this stuff. And
Orange
they are
County.
So,
you were supposed to solve
everyone
everything.
Moves to Orange County, guys. I love it. It's like, I just saw a video where this guy's like moving from Idaho to Orange County. I'm like, we have enough pastors here, dude. Like,
But California is the promised land. There's a revival on the way.
Go west, young man, young colonizer.
Yeah.
I actually have a friend of mine. Well, friend is a loose term. It's like a friend of a friend who literally his sole purpose in living in LA is to be an influencer for Christ because it's so dark.
So
influencer.
And the thing about it is
influencer
is that LA does what y'all get like what four days of rain a year, like 4 days of rain. Ever? It's only rained in California four times. That's a fact.
It's true. When things are crumbling, when it is so scary, and we have to recognize that some people are clinging to a thing and yelling really loudly, and they're the ones who in the back room are saying to me, "What if it's all wrong?" And I gave
my favorite thing to do is just like, as I tell people, I'm just like, the gag is that you're right. The thing is, like, if you think that, what if
it is?
That means in some universe it already exists.
Yeah, it's that.
And
like this
and
sun,
then guess what? That universe is this universe. That's the thing. It's like it's this universe, and you did give your like you did pledge your life to a false idol, and you did give your life to a false god, and you are going to lose your life in order to find it.
Oh man,
you brought
that
it back to
sermon.
Church.
This is exactly what Jesus is talking about. Listen, if you, and what does it mean to follow the Christ? It means to follow after that which is going to make me into my fullest and truest self, right?
Right. Yes.
And so if to lose my life for the sake of Christ is to lose my life, what I think is my life, my small life, my ego life, my career, all that shit, it's small potatoes compared to being free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Sarah, I want you to take all those fucking words that you said, and I want you to apply them to yourself every damn day when you feel a little bit.
I know. It's been.
Because that means, like, that means that all these words, like, the best words, and I take this for everybody listening, the truest words you're ever going to hear are the words that you speak to yourself. Everything me and Sarah are saying here, everything Blake has already said, anytime you hear an inspirational thing on the internet or in a meme, you already know it.
You're returning home.
Yes. You're just waking up to
you
something that you
already
have already. Mm-hmm, you're just returning back to what you already understand. You've
it
always
feels
understood.
So good because it's familiar. I think about like Morgan Harper Nichols stuff. It always feels like she is reading my journal, right? Like she's reading my journal. She's saying the thing I need to say or need to hear. But it's also
sometimes
to say.
Right. I think that you know, sometimes someone else says the brave thing that you need to hear so that later you can say the brave thing that someone else needs to hear.
I want to see you be brave. Say what you want to say.
You know, I feel like this is the closest I've felt to like actually, you know, going to the serious corner of the party in like 2 years.
Like, it's us.
Like that's how it. That's
you didn't
how it,
see that coming. You did not see that we would be the team that brought you there.
I mean, no, but it was great. Like we just let it happen, and that's what a party's like. So
and much like every party, by sitting in the same place, I've somehow lost both of my weed vapes, even though I have not moved.
And I'm starting to sweat a little.
That's how you know the party's over. I'm like, all right, fuck it. I've lost my shit.
And then I go find your purse.
I'm really thankful for this conversation.
I'm so grateful for this.
It was a treat. It was a dream.
So where where can people find your favorite aunts? Where, just plug all the things. Where can people find
Sarah, you, you start first.
Sure. Your favorite aunts is Thursdays, and it's 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. The rest of you in the middle of the country, you guys are way better at math than us, so you'll figure it out. And we go live on Kevin's YouTube is one way, and Kevin's Facebook. And if you're on Instagram, you can find myself at Rev Sarah Heath and everything that I've done. My books are on Amazon. I also have another podcast that we just finished season 3 called Making Spaces Podcast. And it's a podcast.
You can also go listen to Sarah's other podcast called Sonderlust season 1. So you can get ready for the eventual return of season 2 of Sonderlust season 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo is what you want to call it. You can't just make fetch happen.
And that's shade.
God, you have a Kevin, good
voice. You can follow me across the internet at the Kevin Garcia. My book is called Bad Theology Kills: Undoing Toxic Belief and Reclaiming Your Spiritual Authority, available on thekevingarcia.com or at badtheologykills.com. I've got e-courses, like things like the Big Queer Bible Study, the Spiritual Reformation Self-Study. So like if you've got some shit that you want to get together, go over to my website. It's got a lot of fun things. I'm available for coaching. I am finishing up the summer coven. My first coven that I ran this summer was very fun. And we're gearing up for probably a fall coven. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you want to, if you're in the Atlanta area, please come to Wonder Fully Made on August 27th in Atlanta, Georgia. You can go to thekevingarcia.com/tour.
And if you're in Chicago and have something that maybe Kevin could talk to you about, maybe we could put together a Chicago area show.
I want to put together a Chicago area show. The reason I came home early.
I totally.
It's just like I was way too ambitious.
And you did so much. I mean, you put together a lot of awesome shows. It was really cool to watch.
We had so much fun.
And it was awesome that Sarah got to do a couple of them. Yeah, it was just great to watch.
Yeah. So I would say that is my everything, you know? And I'd also like to promote everybody to go take a nap.
Yes, and
Irreverent Media Group, which is how we get to know each other. Guys, the best thing about us all working together is just getting to know each other more and more and be on each other's things and get to do like this. This was such a fun show to do. So thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Check out irreverent.fm, irreverent_FM on social everywhere. There's a lot of really wonderful shows and there's going to be a lot of the hosts over at Wild Goose next month. So yeah, check that out. Kevin, yeah, Sarah, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on Exvangelical tonight.
Oh, it was so good.
I don't know what I'm looking at. We're looking at something on Kevin's screen. It says the chicken seas.
I'm too drunk chicken and stoned to sea. Be here anymore, you guys.
Chicken of the
sea. First Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts, and if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.